And with that being said, I want to announce my commitment to Kansas State University.
And there you have it. The former Dallas Mavericks head coach and NBA star Avery Johnson is going to Kansas State. And I didn't know he had any eligibility left. Who knew?
He's good very dude. Happy to be at Kansas.
I can't. That wasn't very good. No, that wasn't very good. No. I was going to try myself. Yeah. I can't do it. High-pitched voice, Avery Johnson. But no, it's the quarterback from Mays. He makes his commitment. He's ranked the number one recruit in football in the state of Kansas for the class of 2023. And as expected, he chose Kansas State University. He's a four-star rated prospect who made his commitment to K-State yesterday. Ranked as the 12th best quarterback in the nation, according to the 24/7. Sports composite rankings. Six of the top 10 ranked recruits in the state of Kansas, according to 24/7 Sports, have now committed to K-State for 2023. Of course, Derby running back Dylan Edwards, ranked number two recruit in the state, had announced, and many people expected them to both go to Kansas State. Once Edwards had decided, then they figured Johnson was going to, and he does. Is it a big deal? Well, according to different recruiting services, Avery Johnson's ranked anywhere from about 120th to 160th in the country, which doesn't seem big or that good of a deal, but at the same time, when you consider he's a 12th best recruit in the country when it comes to quarterbacking, he's a four-star recruit, and he's a top kid in Kansas. He stayed in Kansas, went to Kansas State, and Kansas really was never an option for him to go and be a Jayhawk. It is a good get, obviously, for Kansas State. What does it mean? I don't know. In the future, I mean, you got the kid they really like, Rubley. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of competition at quarterback Kansas State. You got Adrian Martinez this year. Of course, he'll be done after this year. But as they say, with the way the transfer portal and NIL and people leaving one year and coming and going, you never can have enough. You can't just rely on one guy to be your stud quarterback. And in some cases, some schools have three or four really good quarterbacks. Look at Texas now. Quinn Ewers had went from Ohio State to Texas, and Arch Manning is going to be brought in, top-rated recruit in the country. I guess you can never have too many quarterbacks, and you assume if I have two or three good ones, at least one, hopefully, it will stay. So whether or not Avery Johnson's going to be a starting quarterback at K-State, whether he's going to take a snap at K-State, whether he's going to be a star, whether he's going to be a bust, whether he's going to, you know, not get to play and then be unhappy and transfer to Oregon after his first year, have no idea. But now we can rejoice because recruiting experts say that this is a good get. It is on paper. Whether or not that translates to the college level, we have no idea. And that applies to every single recruit in the country that's not named Avery Johnson.
Dylan Edwards, yes. Like we say the same things about him, right? Like, well, another thing about it is, like, these guys aren't even signed yet, right? Like,
right.
They're committed. So
sure, that can change.
What if Alabama comes calling for Avery Johnson during the season? You know what I mean? Like, something might change that. I don't,
sure.
He seems like he's been a K-State fan his whole life, and this was kind of what he wanted to do. He's always wanted to play at K-State, so that's obviously something that bodes well for a team trying to get a guy like that. But again, he's class of 2023, so they haven't even had their football season yet for high school leading into his first year of college. So obviously there's still plenty of time before he's on campus, as is Dylan Edwards and the other four guys from Kansas that they're bragging about that K-State has got commitments from. So KU, I know in the past, has had some four-star guys that were committed, and then all of a sudden they're gone before they even get close to signing day. So you got to take it all with a grain of salt, basically, is what we're saying, and just got to wait until it plays out. That's the way recruiting is. I've never gotten myself personally real, real high on it, because you just don't know until they actually get to campus. And once sure. they're on the team, signed, and playing for your team in the fall, not just the spring, then you can get excited about it. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Well, we got to remember, we're talking about 18-year-old kids, basically. Maybe
these
they're
are 17. Yeah,
sometimes they're 17. I know my oldest will be 17 when he graduates high school, one of the youngest in the class. Some are 19. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 17, 18, 19-year-old kids. And then it's funny because we have all these adults. Dusty's how old? You are how
old? I'm 38.
I'm 46. Jason's
45.
45. And then I've got people that are older than us that are y'all, and then people that are younger that are in their 20s that are all excited about a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid, which is great. But do you remember what you were like when you were 17, 18, and 19? You didn't exactly probably have your head on screwed on straight perfectly. You were, it was a major adjustment from high school to college. You had your independence. And now imagine in a social media age where you're a top recruit, people know what you look like. Avery Johnson's easy to find with his long hair and everything else. And now you're kind of a star on campus, even though you haven't even played a down at Kansas State University. People are going to want a piece of you, whether it's autograph or they might get upset you don't do something for them and hold it against you. You've got to watch how you uphold yourself, carry yourself. That's what's usually reserved for people that are in the adult life after college. As because us Joe Schmoes that aren't that athletic, that didn't play college sports, don't have to worry about that. We can blend in with everybody else. We can go to the bars, or we can go to the clubs, or we can go to the library or the museum or whatever. We don't have to worry about being hassled, for the most part. But when you're Avery Johnson, Dylan Edwards, or, you know, obviously an Adrian Martinez, and who, by the way, you know, whether you're a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior, you're still probably no older than 22 at the most, unless you're Jalen Coleman Lands. He's 37. That played for KU and 8 different teams. Okay, I'm exaggerating just a little bit, but close on the teams. But, I mean, come on. It always cracks me up. I lost a friend over this. Well, they were a close friend. When this person I know in my high school made all kinds of mistakes. She was not perfect, not even close to perfect, and nobody is. And she made some major mistakes in her life, and she owned up to them for the most part. But then when she's going off on Elijah Johnson after he dunked at the end of an Iowa State game that she didn't even watch, and then calling him all kinds of stuff, and we're going back and forth, I'm like, well, can you just stop for one moment and put yourself in his shoes? He's 19 or 20. You remember when you were 19 or 20? I was like, I remember when you were in high school. We all made mistakes in high school. And then, of course, she knew what I was referencing. And then, boom, I'm not a – that's that. It's like, dear God, you know, can you just stop for a moment and understand that you once were that age? How would you feel when you're ripping an 18, 19-year-old kid – and by the way, she's a K-State fan, so I don't know why she needed to care about ripping the guy. And the guy, Elijah Johnson, had received death threats from his own fans at KU. And it's like, nobody deserves death threats no matter what age you are, let alone a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid playing college basketball who, God forbid, dunked at the end of a basketball game when nobody wanted to guard him. And yes, was it a little bit rubbing it in? Do you take it as, well, that wasn't necessary? Well, sure. Did he commit a crime? No. But boy, that's how people made it, right? Oh, there's that thug, Elijah Johnson. There's that, okay, you, that's just so unsportsmanlike and classless and da-da-da. And then, of course, people came out and said this, that, including my friend. And I tried to have an objective conversation. And I didn't say, hey, what he did was right. I didn't say he's the greatest player ever lived. You can't possibly criticize the kid. What I tried to tell my former high school classmate, who no longer wants to talk to me after that, which I'm perfectly fine with, because if that's the way you're going to deal and you're not going to have a conversation, then I don't want to deal with you anyway. I don't need you in my life. And it was like, can you just stop for a second and remember what you were like when you were that age? And how about now? Can we just stop for a second? And like you said, enjoy Avery Johnson going to K-State. That's great. Top recruit. But we treat these, say, 18-year-old kids like they're robots. No, no, no. Avery Johnson might be a complete bust. And even if he is, it doesn't mean he can't have a great life and do great things in the world. Or he could be the next great quarterback at Kansas State, and K-State wins a national championship, and Avery Johnson is the catalyst for it. It could be one or the other. It could be somewhere in between. Jonathan Beasley, all right? He might be the next Jake Waters. He might be the next Skylar Thompson. He might be Josh Freeman, where the team doesn't have a lot of success, but he puts up big numbers and then goes to NFL. We have no idea. The kid's 17, for crying out loud. I mean, and he's not going to play, and he's probably not going to play when he's 18. He's probably going to have to sit for a year or two before he's even going to play at Kansas State once he's on campus. Probably. Now, I don't know for sure. Have no idea. What happens if he's just like, whoa, this is awesome, man. The girls are all over me. I like to go clubbing. And he gets in a little trouble with the law. He gets a little pot, or, you know, he's underage drinking. He gets a DUI. You know, when all of a sudden things start to go, oh, well, Avery Johnson, well, he's this great Kansas kid. What happened to him? And then people start criticizing the kid, where he made an honest mistake that many people probably made in regards to, you know, drinking underage. I'm not condoning it, okay? Now, obviously, DUI is a serious, serious matter. I don't care what age you are. I don't condone any of that either. But the point is, when you're young, and even now in my age, and Justy's age, and Jason's age, anybody listening, are any of us perfect? We're still making mistakes, in some cases left and right. And yet we expect these kids that aren't even out of high school yet,
who are committing to college. We're already talking and comparing them to former K-State greats, and this kid's going to be unbelievable. And we don't even know the kid, other than he's from Kansas. And just because he's from Kansas doesn't make him out to be a better kid than any other kid from another state. It just so happens that Kansas State is a university in Kansas that kept a kid in state, which I think is awesome. I think it's great that K-State can keep these kids at K-State instead of going to Oregon or Washington. So I think it's a terrific thing for K-State, and I think it's great for the state of Kansas for the most part. Now, if you're a KU fan, you might not like it. And, of course, right now you're poo-pooing everything. Oh, they're ranked really – he's not that big a recruit. Well, yeah, because you lost out on him. If you would have got him, KU fans would be thumping their chest like K-State, talking about how great we got the number one recruit. Yay, K-State, you got five of them, but we got the number one guy. He's a quarterback for Mays. But sometimes we just got to pump the brakes. That's just my feeling. And that's in general, not just this. I'm just talking in general. Anybody. Same thing with KU. I mean, you got Kai Thomas. I mean, Kai Thomas isn't 28, all right? He could still make mistakes. He's a transfer from Minnesota. He's proven at the college level, so you feel better about it. It doesn't mean he's going to fit in perfectly at KU. He might be a bust, too. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. We as a collective, we're better at this than we used to be with college, especially with college football and college football players. It used to be really, really nasty, but we're, you know, you commit somewhere, and then maybe you decommit a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Oh, you get, you know, Twitter is full of just vile things said against you. And you know, you're no good, you're lazy, you're a quitter, you're this, you're that, just because you change your mind on where you want to go to college.
Right.
And now you see it.
In some cases, you haven't even been on campus.
Right,
and you're a traitor. It's like, dear, I hadn't even been on campus yet.
Yeah,
I hadn't even enrolled yet.
We're better at it than what we used to be, but also at the same time, college football fandom can be one of the nastiest places.
No doubt.
For that kind of stuff. And, you know, hope it all works out for him and K-State and wherever he plays, whatever he ends up on the depth chart, you know, maybe the K-State Hall of Fame or whatever he got, maybe the College Football Hall of Fame, maybe a first-round draft pick. I don't know. Somewhere in between, it's going to be what it's going to be, and you know, just enjoy the ride. You know, that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Well, K-State enjoying the ride right now because they've got a lot of the top kids in Kansas that are going to Kansas State. That doesn't equal 10-win seasons and national championships or Big 12 titles. We don't know. It could. It might not. I mean, it worked pretty well with K-State women's basketball back in the day when they had the Kansas kids and did very, very well. Of course, they never made it to a Final Four. In fact, they disappointed when they got an NCAA tournament many years, and they were a higher seed. But they had great years, and they won the Big 12 title, and they did well in the tournament, Big 12 tournament, and so forth and so on. Remember Kendra Wecker and Nicole Oldie and Lori Kane? All right? And then there's been others at K-State with women's basketball. But K-State's done a great job of keeping the kids in state, top kids that go to K-State. That's a great sign for them, no doubt. Does it mean that they're going to be that much better than KU because they got the Kansas kids and KU didn't get as many of them? Once again, does anybody go back to 1998 and say, we had more kids from Kansas on that team than Kansas, and that's why K-State was so good in 1998? No. Nobody says that. Nobody even remembers where these kids are from for the most part. They just remember what they did at K-State once they're at K-State. They might remember Terrence Newman's from Salina, and of course Darren Sproles and Skylar Thompson, but they don't remember the other guys.
Mark Seminoe's from Smith Center.
Not everybody remember that.
Yeah.
We do in this area. But so it's a good sign. It's really good for K-State. And obviously Avery Johnson now has pressure. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
And he's got pressure where he went, but I think there's even more pressure when you're staying in state. Because you go to Oregon, you got other guys that are highly recruited going to Oregon. K-State don't get as many 4 stars as probably Oregon does. Mm-hmm. So Oregon's like, oh, Avery Johnson, another quarterback in the mix. Nice young kid. Looks like he's going to be a good player. K-State, meanwhile, hey, this kid, K-State, we beat out KU. We beat out these other institutions like Oregon. This kid, it's a bigger deal to K-State to get Avery Johnson than it would be for Oregon or Washington, which to me creates a little bit more pressure.
I'd say it's a different kind of pressure.
Yes.
You know, there's still pressure going to those places because you're a highly touted recruit.
Right.
No matter where you're going to go.
Right.
And if you don't pan out, because I'm going to tell you, like, Washington wanted him probably too, and some of their fan base and some of Oregon's fan base probably wanted him too, once they heard a little bit about the kid. So there's still going to be pressure. But, yeah, it's definitely a different kind of pressure because it's all right there with you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't – you can't, like, get away from it. like you can if you're going to the Pacific Northwest, right? Like everybody's right here.
That's what I'm saying.
And
to me, there is more pressure.
And I would say there's just a little bit more pressure, but again, it's just a different, it's a different kind, and it's just something that, that is probably more in the back of your mind than it would be had you gone to the Pac. Well, whatever they're going to be in when he would have gone there, but
right.
But yeah, there's definitely pressure, but you know that. Just how do you deal with that? Who knows?
Sure. Well, everybody's different.
Yeah.
I think Bubba Starling had more pressure because he was the backdoor kid from Gardner-Edgerton that went to be with the Royals and supposed to be, you know, one of the saviors. He's a top, highly recruited he was recruited in Nebraska for football, for crying out loud. He's that good of an athlete. And he goes fifth overall to the Royals, and he ends up being, and for a draft pick, he was a bust, absolute bust.
Mm-hmm.
Great person that's going to do well and has a lot of money. He's not stupid. He's a very smart guy, but it just didn't work out with him. The injuries, he had some issues with his vision, had that corrected when he was in the minors. Never panned out, but there's no doubt that he had more pressure, I think, in regards to there was more scrutiny, I would say, for him, because, yes, you could say there'd be more scrutiny in New York as a fifth overall pick, but when you're with the Royals and you're the homegrown guy and the Royals passed on all these other guys, they end up being, Evan Longoria is one of them, that end up being stars behind Bubba Starling, then there became even more scrutiny talking about how big a bust Bubba Starling was. So I think there's pros and cons. Obviously, you stay in Kansas. You're familiar with Kansas and Avery Johnson. You go away. You're away from family. There's a pro and a con to that. But Avery Johnson made his decision based on what he's most comfortable with. But that doesn't mean he's going to be still comfortable with it 1 or 2 or 3 years from now. The odds are right now that you guys aren't going to stay. I mean, if you just play the odds game more and more, most kids are going to transfer and at least go to another school and try something. Maybe Avery Johnson won't be one of those, but that's the trend. That's where it's going. All right, speaking of youth, the Royals had some youth on display last night, and their young hitters hit home runs. Unfortunately, they lost.
That ball's drilled. Forget about it. Aledmys Diaz, after a 13-pitch at bat, to Yuli Gurriel, connects on the first pitch and sends it out to left field.
MJ Melendez with his 9th homer, his 3rd in 2 games, and Bobby Witt Jr. his 12th home run of the season last night. Royals had early 2-0 lead, couldn't hang on to it. Zach Greinke had a rough night, as they had a nice little video and tribute to Greinke coming back to Houston. Greinke, of course, pitched in Houston. He goes 5 innings, 10 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, 2 Ks, allowed 2 home runs. Jackson Coar came on in relief, 3 innings, 3 runs. He gave up 2 homers as well. Of course, it's a bandbox in Houston when it comes to trying to pitch in that park, as we know. We saw that even back in the 2015 ALDS. Here is Greinke on making too many mistakes.
It wasn't that good. Stuff felt pretty sharp, but made a lot of mistakes. And didn't really make a lot of quality strikes. I think pretty much, maybe I think I had 10 hits or something. Probably at least like 8 of them were mistakes. And they hit some balls hard when I executed, but almost just about all their hits were on mistakes. So made too many of those.
He is so exciting to listen to. I love Zach. I really do. I just like how he's different. I like that. Zach is 2-5 on the season now, as he gets shelled a bit there. And the Royals now 29-50 as they lose last night to the Astros 9-7. Astros won the first 2 games of the series. They're 53-27. Game 3 of the 4-game set is tonight at Minute Maid Park in Houston at 7:10. Brad Keller on the hill. His record 3-9. ERA 4.24, which is respectable in today's age of baseball. And he's had a couple of rough outings that have ballooned that ERA. But for the most part, he's been pretty solid and been dominant at times, and his record doesn't do him justice at all. But the right side, of course, is that you got Wood Jr. He had the home run. He had 3 RBIs, 2 hits last night. Melendez with a home run. Pascatino played first base last night. O'Hearn is relegated to a pinch hitter, and the only reason he came in is because Bobby Witt got hit on the hand. X-rays are clean, by the way, on Bobby Witt Jr., which is great, after he hit a 428 home run. Foot home run last night, and so it is good to see the young hitters raking a little bit. But once again, it comes down to, guess what happened last night? The Royals scored 7 runs. This is the perfect example I've been talking about now for a few weeks. Melendez hit a homer. Bobby Witt Jr. hit a homer. Melendez hit 2 homers in the first game of the series, and the Royals lost both games. And they blew a 5-0 lead. Last night they had an early lead. And the Royals are tied for the league lead in losses when they score seven or more runs, yet they have the sixth fewest amount of games where they've scored seven or more. So that's not a good combination. It means that they score, but they can't stop the other team. And that goes back to the years, as I talked about, Dye, Beltran, and Damon, with Ricky Blotalico in the bullpen, starting pitching wasn't very good, bullpen that would blow leads, and it don't matter if you score 7, 8, 9, or 10, they would still lose. Because they didn't have good pitching, in some cases not great defense. Now, they have pretty good defense this year. But here's the other thing about the Royals. You've got to have guys, and granted, Zach Greinke's 38. He's not a power pitcher anymore, but you need easy outs. What are easy outs? The easy outs are ones where you don't have to field the ball, called strikeouts. And Brad Keller's had some games okay. Lynch had 10 strikeouts in a game. He's on the rehab assignment right now. Brady Singer recently had a lot of punch-outs. But you need to have guys that have strikeout stuff, especially you need guys. Think about the best pitchers of all time in the modern era right now. Justin Verlander, back from Tommy John surgery, that's a guy that can be in the bases-loaded jam with nobody out and can get out of it. He can strike out two and get a pop-up. Or is runner second and third, nobody out, one out. He can get a strikeout. Next thing you know, you don't have to bring in the infield in a close game. You're good to go. Max Scherzer's the same way. Got power stuff. Clayton Kershaw's got power, but he's also got that nasty curveball. They've got strikeout stuff. Those are three of the pitchers in the modern era that are dominant, and they made tons of money, and rightfully so, because those guys, even, you know, Steven Strasburg helped win a World Series in his you know, confined time when he was healthy. He was a power pitcher as well. And the guys that can get the easy outs are the guys you seek. And the Royals can't afford to go get those guys on free agent market. So what did they got to do? They got to draft them, develop them, hang on to them as long as they can. And then eventually, when they can't afford the long-term deal, then you trade them and get prospects. That's what small market teams, for the most part, have to do, including the Royals. And quite honestly, Jackson Coar's got the ability to be a power pitcher in regards to striking guys out and getting easy outs. But the Royals, they just don't get those easy outs, which means you have to rely a lot on your defense, which is fine. But eventually, hitters find holes. They just do. Or they hit it over the fence. And you can't defend that.
No. It's getting harder and harder and harder to talk about this team, isn't it? But especially after a night like that where Zach is supposed to be your guy, right? Yeah. And then he is like down after it. He's like, yeah, no, I wasn't there tonight. It wasn't good. And I'm like, yeah. And then you read that stat about
we score these runs
seven
and don't
runs and can't win. And it's like, oh my goodness, man. Like, yeah. This, it's just, yeah. And that's obviously the sign, is the pitching is not there. And I get tired of talking about that, but it's just what it is. And it's been that way for forever.
And the scary part is the Royals' hitting isn't one that is as good as that team I talked about back with Beltran and Dye. And this team isn't capable of scoring seven on a regular basis for the span of 2 weeks.
No.
Here's the Major League Baseball standings right now. Update: the Yankees, best record in baseball, 58-23. They have a 13-game lead over Boston, and then Tampa Bay's 14 back. Toronto's 14.5 back. Toronto's 44-38, and they're in fourth place in the AL East. You know, Baltimore's not that shabby, 38-44. If Baltimore was in the Central, they would be in third, close to third place. In the Central, Minnesota has a 4.5-game lead over the Guardians. White Sox still struggling under 500, 38-41. Royals in last place by 3.5 games now, 29-50. And the run differential is -102. Not the worst in baseball, though. The A's have a worst one at 110. The Houston Astros have a 13.5-game lead over Seattle, 15.5 over Texas. The Angels are just flat-out falling apart. The Mets have a 2.5-game lead over the Braves, 7 games over the Phillies in the NL East. NL Central, Cardinals are 3 games behind the first-place Brewers. And in the NL West, the Dodgers have a 5.5-game lead over San Diego, and the Giants are 10.5 back. And that leads us to our Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
It's brought to you by Hank Voigt. He is a fictional character in the television series Chicago PD, which... Wow. 9 seasons. I had no idea.
Yeah.
There's Chicago Fire and Chicago MD, which is all in the same universe.
My oldest
universe.
Watched Chicago Fire. He liked that show.
Yeah. I've caught some reruns of Chicago PD, but nothing in order, but yeah. Hank Voigt.
They paid a lot of money to be the sponsor of this segment.
Yes, yes. Leader of the intelligence unit out of the 21st district. But anyway, Cubs won 8-3 over the Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh-hoo! Cubs beat the first-place Brewers.
33-48 now.
By the way, the Cubs are -63 in run differential, and they're 33-48. So that really doesn't tie in as they should be a little bit better record-wise. If you're wondering about the worst run differential in all of Major League Baseball, it might surprise you who it is. I mentioned the A's are -110. The Royals are -102. Those are the two worst in the American League. In the National League, the Reds are -100. The Pirates are -113. Like, the Pirates are 50 runs worse than the Cubs and have a half-game better record. So that goes to show you that, you know, Pirates must get a lot of blowouts. But the worst run differential, the Washington Nationals, -129. Ouch. They're 29-54. They're actually worse than the Royals. The Royals do not have the worst record in baseball. The Royals have the second worst record in the American League. And there's only, so they're better than three teams. So they're the fourth worst team in Major League Baseball. So when people tell you the Royals are the worst team in baseball, they're wrong. They're only the fourth worst.
It just feels like that.
It just feels like it. Yeah, absolutely. They're the worst in our division, but yeah, besides that. All right. You know, I think everybody knows that we've talked NBA, we talked about the recent draft, and everybody knows that I was all on board the Chet Holmgren train to go to OKC. Everybody knows this. And this is how we spin things. And if I want to run for office, I can tell you that what you heard before, you didn't hear. You just weren't listening very well.
Fake news.
Fake news. There you go. But honestly, I'm going to be unlike a politician. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't like Chet Holmgren going to OKC Thunder. I would have rather had Ben Caro or Jabari Smith. I could be wrong. And I talked about it before. I'd be happy to be wrong about this. Now, I know it's just one game. It was a summer league game last night. However, Oklahoma City Thunder rookie Chet Holmgren, all of 7'1", 195, soaking wet, shined in his professional debut. He scored 23 points for the Thunder. He set an NBA summer league record for blocks and threes in a game, and it was his first summer league game. The number two pick in the draft had 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 6 block shots in just 24 minutes. Helped the Thunder rout the Jazz 98-77. He became the first player in summer league history to record at least 5 blocks and hit 4 three-pointers. He averaged 14 points, 10 rebounds at Gonzaga, along with 4 block shots. In the game yesterday, he was 7-for-7 from two-point range, 4-of-6 from 3, 5-of-5 from the foul line. He did have a sweet fadeaway that looked like Dirk Nowitzki, no doubt about it. Some people have said they've compared Holmgren to Nowitzki, and if he's going to be anything close to Nowitzki, then I eat crow, I will eat my words, and I'll be happy to be wrong, and it's one hell of a pick by the Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's why they're in charge, and I am not. I still worry about the physicality of the game. I think he needs to put on probably at least 25, 30 pounds, mostly, hopefully, muscle. I think it could happen. I don't know for sure. And as Todd said, I saw he put a comment on our post, and we had talking about Chet proving me and the critics wrong, possibly making us eat our words, although it's just one summer league game. The summer league isn't exactly as physical and intense as regular NBA games, and of course we can get to the postseason, which I don't know if the Thunder will probably be in the postseason next year, more than likely not. However, he's going up against other NBA talent and draft picks, and he did more than hold his own. So should I already be eating my words and eating crow, or should I let this play out a little longer than one summer league game, Jason?
No, you do the most dramatic thing possible.
Overreact?
Every day. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
And then tomorrow.
Chet Holmgren is going to be better than Dirk Nowitzki. Mark my words. He's the greatest number two overall pick in NBA draft history.
And in 4 days when he has a bad summer league game.
The worst draft pick the Thunder have ever had. I don't know what they were thinking. I told you they should have taken Jabari Smith.
No, the logical thing would be to let it play out, but That's some fun.
That's not what society does. We don't let things play out. Why would we want to do that?
No,
that's just.
I still think he's gonna be fine. I think he's gonna be fine. That might not be number two pick overall,
right?
But I think.
I think he's a guy that could be. This is what I think he could be. I think he could be like a 16. He could average 15, 16 a game, grab up 7, 8 rebounds a game, and 2 or 3 block shots a game. Mm-hmm. That's a really solid player. That's not an all-star. But that's a solid, really good player. The question is that enough at the number two overall pick? We've talked about it before. If he's at number 15 or 20, that's a really good pick. At number two, you need a guy probably averaging 20, 10, and 4. Something like that.
Right.
Yeah. That'd be ideal.
And, this year, and change the game defensively.
I don't know how many of those guys are out there.
I know. We'll find out.
You can only pick... Who's available? So.
That's true. I remember in 2017, Bryn Forbes was going to be the next NBA superstar after summer league. Mm-hmm. I said it. Everybody said it. Everybody knew it.
Yeah. Right.
And how that knows who that is anymore, probably.
There you go. There you go. Take it with a grain of salt. Well, you know, summer league's kind of like spring training sometimes, you know. This guy, oh, the Royals are just, yeah. they're scoring 12 runs a game. This is amazing, you know. And these guys are doing all this stuff, and this guy's been unbelievable. And then the next thing you know, he's back in the minors after 1 month, demoted because he's not hitting the ball against actual starting pitching. And the Royals are suddenly getting shut out to lead the major leagues like 9 times this year. All right, Wimbledon update, Dusty, and the Joker keeps going.
Yeah, this is brought to you by Big Ben today, the big tower.
This is awesome.
The quarterfinals got underway Tuesday.
I'm feeling left out. I got to come up with my own segment with a sponsor, too.
Kansas City Landmarks.
Chet Holmgren update brought to you by Stilts,
Bricktown.
Something like that. Bricktown. Bricktown's a great place in OKC, absolutely.
Yeah, you said the Joker's rolling on, but it wasn't easy yesterday.
No,
he lost his first 2 sets to Yannick Sinner, the number 10 seed, but then came back to win the next 3 to take a 5-set win there. Cameron Norrie, the number 9 seed, also moving on to the semifinals. Women's action, Ange de Boer, the number 3 seed, and unseeded Tatiana Maria moving on with 3-set wins. Quarterfinals today, Rafael Nadal, number 2, against 11-seeded American Taylor Fritz. He's our country's hope on the men's side right
Go
now.
Go Taylor.
Fritz, let's get it. Somebody's got to win a major for our country, man.
Hasn't happened since, what, 2003, I think?
Roddick was the last one in 2003,
yeah. And last one to make a final, I think, is 2009 with Roddick.
Isner made it once.
Was it semifinals? I don't think he made the final. They had a graphic showing the last guy to make a major it was Isner. The last guy to make it to a major final was Roddick, I think, when he might have lost to Federer at Wimbledon. I don't know if that was the right year. And the last time to win was Roddick and I believe U.S. Open in 2003. Was the last, because wasn't that the only major Roddick won? Was the U.S. Open?
Yeah.
So 2003, we're talking almost 2 decades since Americans won a major.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So
we're big Taylor Fritz fans today.
Yes. Yes, which means Nadal's going to smoke
exactly. And then on the women's side, 20-seed Amanda Anisimova of the U.S. is taking on 16-seed Simona Halep. Those are kind of the highlights for today at Wimbledon.
All right. I was going to see here and pull that up to check. He lost in the semifinals, 26-24 in the final set.
Oh. Yeah, because I remember it was like, God,
against Kevin Anderson.
Got to get this guy.
He would have been in the final if he won that.
So we got to get at least somebody into the finals.
Didn't happen.
No.
Unfortunately. But, man, that is... Of course, Isner's the one that had that long, long match against Mahut that lasted 11 hours and 5 minutes. It was 70-68 in the 5th set. Isner has had some big, long sets at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Did Wimbledon put in a tiebreaker system?
Yeah, they changed their rules. You can't do that anymore.
That's probably good. All right, no show is complete here on the Sports Ticket without dealing with the newest game show, docu-series, whatever we want to call it. The latest, I need to have like some kind of gong or bong or what, not bong, but make a that bong time sound, you know, right. I think people know what I'm talking about, but get your minds out of the gutter. Anyway, some kind of special effect I work on here to let everybody know that we are segueing into conference realignment. Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. Here's the latest. Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah were mentioned specifically as teams being targeted by the Big 12. There's also consideration of adding Oregon and Washington to make the Big 12 an 18-team league. A merger of the Big 12 and Pac-12 in some form also a possibility. Everything is on the table, according to one Big 12 source. There is no question the Big 12 has to be aggressive in expansion, another conference source said. Despite the Big 12's attempts, the Pac-12 released a statement on Monday saying it would immediately begin negotiations on its next TV deal, intending to go forward with at least its 10 remaining members. There is a possibility more could be added to the mix, according to a Pac-12 source. Pac-12's current deal expires in 2024. However, a source familiar with the negotiations said that doesn't necessarily mean the Pac-12 will all be together in 3 months. Colorado came out with a statement, we're part of the Pac-12, we support this. Of course, what do you expect them to say right now? The Pac-12 is expected to enter into a exclusive 30-day negotiating window with current rights holder Fox and ESPN before entertaining offers from other bidders. Before the Pac-12 statement, one industry source suggests the Big 12 should quickly expand with Pac-12 teams, then go to the market early with rights holders to get ahead of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 deal with Fox and ESPN expires in 2024. The Big 12's deal with the same networks expires a year later in 2025. All those things have been talked about, according to one Big 12 source. Adding at least 4 schools, or at least those 4 schools, which is Arizona and Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, would extend the Big 12 further into the Mountain Time Zone, creating travel partners for incoming member BYU, while also adding a rival for the Cougars in the Utah Utes. The Arizona schools are 2 hours apart and feature Phoenix as a major market acquisition for the conference. What the Big 12 cannot afford to do, according to multiple industry sources, is stand pat, which is what they've done under prior leadership. There is still the lingering question of who even has leverage in adding teams between the Pac-12 and the Big 12. You know, I'll stop for a moment in this article because there are people here in Big 12 country in the state of Kansas, and I've seen people that are in the media that somehow believe the Big 12 is in way better position than the Pac-12. And according to many people that are that have ties to the TV networks and so forth and so on, they'll tell you it's not as big a difference as people think it is, even without USC and UCLA. Because remember, it's not like the Big 12 has an anchor tenant with a big brand either, with Texas, Oklahoma leaving. One industry source gave what was termed a slight advantage to the Big 12 and being able to snatch teams from the other conference. The difference in earning value between the Big 12 and Pac-12 would be negligible after this round of realignment. But in expanding, the Big 12 would at least be fortifying itself while, of course, diminishing the Pac-12 or maybe making it obsolete. Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah bring in an average annual average value that at least matches the 12 members of the Big 12 set to remain with the league once Texas, Oklahoma leave in 2025. That's Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. So that's why they're targeting these four schools, obviously. And that's one reason why Big 12 expansion would work in this case, as the conference would not aim to make its slices of meteorites pie smaller, because they'd be adding that average value from those four schools. It's not yet known whether adding Oregon and Washington is viewed the same way by the Big 12 as adding Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. Of course, all of this is assuming that Fox Sports, a half partner with ESPN in both conferences, is even interested in doing a deal with either one of these reconstituted leagues. If not, ESPN could become the primary rights holder if they're interested. So there is a relationship to be repaired with the Big 12 after outgoing Commissioner Bob Bowlesby alleged last summer a conspiracy involving ESPN, the SEC, and the American Conference. And, of course, the new commissioner, Brett Yormark, starts August 1st, although I think he's probably already started. And I think that's something that hasn't really been thrown out there as much either, is that you've got a change in leadership, which some people would say, well, that's good, but the timing might not be. And then Yormark's got to come in and maybe not as highly respected because he's the new guy on campus, and he's got to be jumping into this thing before he's supposed to start August 1st. Does that cause some members of the Pac-12 pause? Like, does Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State say, you know what? Yeah, Big 12 looks really enticing, and it would make sense for us to leave. We don't think it's going to be that good if we stay here in the Pac-12. But I don't know about your leadership, because there's not a track record with this guy, and there isn't. Hold that thought for just a second. The Pac-12's projected annual average value dropped from $500 million annually, approximately $42 million per school, to about $300 million with the loss of USC and UCLA. That is 40%. Mm-hmm. Navigate, a sports and entertainment consultant group, stated in March that members of a 12-team Big 12 would earn $52 million by 2029. Other industry insiders have disputed that figure. Of course, we're talking the Big Ten's $80 to $100 million. SEC is going to be in that range as well, if not more. Notre Dame's preference right now, of course, is remain independent. The possibility of earning $80 to $100 million in the Big Ten could impact that stance, but Notre Dame has left money on the table before, actually for decades. And there were reports yesterday that the Notre Dame is basically not necessarily said, but seems to be leaning towards not joining the Big Ten. So the Big Ten, they would move on maybe and say, okay, we'll bring in Oregon or Washington, or maybe you look at a KU, I don't know. If Notre Dame decides and makes it public, we're staying independent, then, of course, all the focus goes to the Big 12, Pac-12, in regards to, are they going to merge? Are they going to poach one another? Or, the one thing that isn't mentioned in the story, what if the SEC just suddenly works behind the scenes and tomorrow Oklahoma State's joining the SEC? Now the Big 12's weakened. That helps the Pac-12 a little bit. Or the Big Ten says, we're adding Oregon, Washington. Well, then what does a Pac-12 have left? If the Big Ten gets Oregon, Washington, then doesn't Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah almost have to join the Big 12?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, if there's not another option, for sure. Well,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know what other option you have.
Yeah.
It's not exactly great options now without USC and UCLA.
No. And it's the freshest thing right now. So.
Yeah. So what about that the Big 12 has a slight advantage over the Pac-12 based on the current membership? Obviously, if the Big 12 takes Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, or just a couple of those, that changes the game, certainly, between the two. But as it's constituted now, the Pac-12 has 10 members, the Big 12 has 12, but they just said Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah, how did I put that? Matches the 12 members of the current Big 12. Just those four
on
alone.
Average, yeah. So that means on average, which means that some of those schools are going to be better than what the Big 12 bring in value-wise. Right. Some of them are not going to be good, right? Like there's going to be some Big 12 schools that are higher than that, some lower, but on average it's about the same. That's what I was saying yesterday, right? I'm like, you can't look at adding schools based on how the SEC and Big 10 are looking at it.
No.
You got to look at it how it benefits your conference and where it sits in your conference. And that's why I said, I'm like, these schools are going to be about the same or maybe even a little bit better of bringing in revenue than what you've got in your conference right now. So as far as that's concerned, again, I'm all on board with it. If they can get those four schools, then fine. If they can get six, if they can get Oregon and Washington, even better for the conference, I feel like, moving forward, because you don't know who might be picked out of the conference by other conferences coming up even in the future. So yeah, I think you got to take as many as you can get and get yourself in a good position here and feel a little bit better about where you're at. And again, like you said, obviously that changes the narrative of who's stronger if the Big 12 can get four teams from the Pac-12. So,
well, one of the things we talk about with the new commissioner for the Big 12, that he's probably going to be an aggressive guy. And you got to be. I mean, Bowlesby wasn't as aggressive as he needed to be, clearly. Obviously, BB was a train wreck as a commissioner. But this is coming from The Athletic, and it's just been retweeted by John Kurtz just a little bit ago. This is from The Athletic. The league, that's the Big 12, is having serious talks with six Pac-12 schools, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon, Utah, and Washington, and is determined to move quickly, sources told The Athletic. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark just hired last week, supposedly starts August 1st. We know that's a bunch of baloney. He's already started.
Mm-hmm.
Has been described as super aggressive by one source and has the backing of the Big 12 presidents and chancellors to pursue the addition of Pac-12 members. For once, the Big 12 maybe finally has understood what to do.
Well, yeah.
Maybe he learned from previous mistakes.
Been working in New York, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think he understands the business part of that.
Yes.
If you don't do something, you're going to be left out in the cold.
Right.
So I think he understands that part of it. Does he have the track record? No, he doesn't, like you said, of what this is and what conference realignment is. But I think he's got a track record of working with media rights and things like that and understanding what it takes. So you hope that translates into this new job, like we were talking about when he got hired.
Absolutely. So, you know, the Pac-12 got to be scared. They got to be freaking out a little bit, I would think.
Yeah.
And I will say that when you talk about Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah, why not go ahead and get Oregon and Washington? Because think about this for a second. You've got 12 now, right? The Big 12, but and then you add four, you're at 16, right?
Yes.
But you're going to lose Oklahoma, Texas, so you're back to 14, right?
Is that
are they talking, because OU and Texas is still part of this league for the next 2 years?
Yeah,
I think taking those out and putting
them. They take them out.
Considering the four that they're adding,
they take them out.
They have 12.
They take them out.
Yeah.
Okay, so they took them out,
and then
so they'd be 12. Okay,
BYU.
So they'd be 16. Without Oklahoma, Texas, and then at Oregon, Washington makes 18.
Right.
Which would then make the Big 12 the biggest conference in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bigger than the Big 10 and the SEC. They'd have more members.
And then that would still leave, like, you know, we're talking about the Big 10 and SEC might be going up to 20 anyway. That'd still leave you room to go up to 20.
Well, what happens to the ACC?
Yeah. Well, that's my point. You can go to them and start trying to get who you think you want out of there, whether that be a Clemson, you fire first and try to get Clemson or somebody out of North Carolina or Duke or whatever. Like, if you want to try to strengthen basketball, try to get Duke. If you want to try to split the difference there with football and get better at basketball, try North Carolina. If you just want to go football, try to get Clemson.
If that was the route you're going to go, though, would you really want to fill up all the way to 18 and only have two spots remaining? Wouldn't you rather have four spots remaining to go after, have more options? Because you really got to pigeonhole yourself to two schools if you want to get to 20.
But
I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there.
In this, you know,
I think you got to take it in cycles, too, because the ACC TV deal is so long that you don't know when that stuff's going to actually go down, right? So I think you got to be proactive and get whatever you can right now.
Yeah.
And then if you can get it to 18, then we're there. And like I said, there still could be that possibility of Oklahoma State or TCU or KU going to the Big Ten or something like that, you know, or the SEC.
If you're going to play this game, it might you might not have to play it fair or right or morally. You might kick somebody out. If you can get,
you know, people keep talking about that though, but I think the legal ramifications of kicking a school out of a conference would be lawsuit after lawsuit. I don't think any conference wants to kick anybody out.
I don't think they want to.
I don't think they want to, and I don't think they would. And here's why I don't think they would, because especially the recent additions, like you've went this far, you got to imagine there's language in a contract. You better believe your bottom dollar that Rutgers is protected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I mean, in Nebraska, if they're smart, they're protected. Because Dusty mentioned after the show yesterday, well, what if Nebraska is one that could be kicked out?
Yeah.
You know, I probably not, but maybe. I mean, we're talking about TV sets and everything else. The other thing is, if I'm the Big 12, I take Arizona, I take Arizona State, I take Colorado, I take Utah. I take those four. Okay, mm-hmm. I take them. Oregon and Washington, to me, Oregon and Washington, they're both in a very tough spot here. I think they're in, obviously, I don't know where Washington State, Oregon State, Cal, Stanford, they got to be worried big time. Right. Stanford's got to be hoping Notre Dame joins the Big Ten, because then Stanford maybe has a better chance to join the Big Ten. And then people talk about academic standards for the Big Ten. Stanford obviously has some of the best academic standards in the country. So maybe there's a tie there. I don't know. But Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State, to me, are really in a tough spot in regards to they're kind of on the outside looking in. But two schools, to me, it looks like Colorado, Arizona State, and Utah are in a better position than Oregon and Washington. Oregon and Washington, according to reports, if you believe these reports, who knows what to believe, is that they would like to join the Big Ten. But the Big Ten doesn't seem to be overly joyous about going and inviting them and bringing them in. So if you're Oregon and Washington, and the Big 12 extends an invitation to you right now, okay, let's say the Big 12 does what the Athletic's talking about. They say, we are inviting Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon, Utah, and Washington to the Big 12. I think, honestly, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, or Utah would join, I think. I don't know for sure. But Oregon and Washington are intriguing because they would prefer going to the Big 10. Who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. With way more money. But if you wait too long, will you still be invited to the Big 12, to that dinner party? Or, as Jason says, the Big 12 can poach from somewhere else and go after somebody else. Then maybe Oregon-Washington isn't as attractive. And then Oregon-Washington plays this game of musical chairs. The music stops, so there's not enough chairs to sit in, and they're left out. Now, I wouldn't think Oregon would be with all the money and everything up there. But, and you know, you got Seattle-Washington market, you know, as well. But it is interesting that Oregon and Washington apparently are not at the same level as Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah, according to reports. And the Big Ten isn't like ready to go grab them, although they might be considering them. And if you're Oregon and Washington, it's kind of like this. Here's the analogy. There's two girls that you're interested in, all right? You're a guy. You got two girls you're very interested in. But one's your top choice. And then the other one's, she's really a really nice gal too. She's invited you to prom.
But
you kind of want to wait and not say yes or no. Just hold them steady for a while and say, well, let me get back to you before she changes her mind. And then you want that top choice to ask you. But how long are you willing to wait until she asks you? And if she doesn't ask you and you wait too long, the other girl goes, I'm sorry, Bobby, but I already talked to Jason Broadfoot, and he said he is going to show me a great time at the prom, and I am going with him. And you're like, well, but Natalie was going to... Oh, but she do. Oh, now she picked Dusty. Son of a buck! I am out. I'm not even part of this whole party. Right. I gotta go stag. Well, unless you're Notre Dame, you don't want to be stag in this situation. That would be the analogy. And I think Oregon, Washington are an interesting spot. And then what happens? Here's the other side of the coin. What happens if Oregon, Washington, like, dude, I'm gonna take my money at the table, right? I'm gambling. I'm gonna take my money at the table. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna accept 1B option. The girl invites me to prom. I'm you know what? I got a sure thing here. I got a place at the table. I'm going to prom. And all of a sudden, Natalie, The one I wanted to go to prom with. She asked me, oh, dear, I'm already committed. I can't. Oh, I would really like to change my mind, but I really probably can't. Or I can, but it's going to cost me millions of dollars to change my mind. You know, I mean, it is. I think Oregon and Washington are in a little bit of a predicament right now. I mean, it's good to know that you think you have two options. Here's right. the key. They think they have two options. Right. But is the Big Ten a serious option for them?
See, that,
and how way. Big of an option yeah. is the Big 12? I mean, are these lukewarm options? Is the Big 12 a serious option for Oregon, Washington, or is it just kicking the tires? Is the Big 10 a serious option for Oregon, Washington, or is it kicking the tires? I think Oregon, Washington are in a bit of a dilemma based on all these reports because they're not the first two that are mentioned. It's Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State. It's not Oregon or Washington, which is intriguing to me.
I think those four were mentioned because I don't think people thought Oregon and Washington would even want to be part of the Big 12.
But
right?
if you don't have a Big 10
but
option,
if they don't have it, then yeah, you got to go after.
Oh,
them.
I agree with you.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Yeah, I think that's why those were the four schools that were mentioned first because they know they feel like that's more realistic to sure. join the Big 12. It fits a lot of the right. parameters of what we're talking about. But
what do you
yeah,
do what
Oregon
do you do if you're Oregon and Washington?
I don't know. I mean,
if the Big 12 invites you tomorrow, what does Oregon and Washington do?
I think they have to take it.
I think to be safe, they have to take it.
Yeah,
because if you're Oregon and Washington right now, you're waiting pretty much to see what Notre Dame
yes.
and maybe even like Clemson or Miami or Florida State are going to do possibly, and so then now you're kind of not the big name in that mix, and so now. I think they have to take it.
I when you look at Clemson and Florida State and Miami and ACC, I think it's going to take longer for that to happen because of the buyout, the contract of 2036, whereas Oregon, Washington, and any of the Pac-12 schools, right. as we just saw USC and UCLA, there's no fee for them to exit
yeah.
because their deal expires in 2024 with the TV rights. And the other part of this is, and I think it's somewhat comical, but maybe I'm a moron. I could be a moron and I got this all wrong. But isn't it somewhat comical for the Pac-12 to say, oh, I mean, I get it. I understand what the Pac-12 is doing. You know, we're going to go forward and work. We're going to speed this up and we're going to negotiate already, immediately start negotiating our next TV deal. Well, you probably should have done that earlier. Okay. So that's bad leadership. But I mean, what network, who's going to offer anything great to a conference that has, don't even know how many members are going to be part of it. There'd have to be a lot of clauses. And, hey, listen, if Oregon isn't part of this and you still want us to have you guys with 10, but when you add Boise State and you keep your league alive but you lose Oregon, guess what, guys?
Well,
the contract changes.
They were having trouble keeping their own network.
Yes.
With USC and UCLA yes. and Oregon and Arizona State. And all that. So I just don't know what they are expect to get. So if you're the Pac-12 and you think you have a chance to stay alive and you want to get into this media, you have to start making phone calls to
yes.
maybe some of these Big 12 schools that are into Oklahoma State and like, hey, do you want in somewhere else? I don't know how aggressive they're going to be at this. The Big 12 seems to be a step ahead in getting this out. I don't it's fun to think of what might happen here, but it's also confusing, and it's also
who
nobody knows
of the remaining Pac-12 members. Okay, remaining, so Oregon, Washington are two of those, and remaining Big 12 members, forgetting Texas, Oklahoma, even though technically they're still part of it. Can you give me what would be the number one and number two, if you could even get that far, schools that move the needle for TV contracts of the remaining Pac-12 schools and the Big 12 constituted now with the additions of the four schools minus Oklahoma, Texas? What if you're Fox and ESPN? If you're looking at this, is what I have. I've got, because the Big 12's got to work out their deal too. Theirs expires 2025. Pac-12 2024. If you're Fox, ESPN, Amazon, whoever it is, TNT, I don't care who it is, CBS. When you look at what's left of the Pac-12, let's just start there. You look at the Pac-12. What school moves the needle for
I think it's the two we're talking about, trying to figure out where they're going.
Okay.
Oregon, I think, would be one based on their football history and obviously the Phil Knight connection.
Right.
And then Washington, I think, would be number two just based on where they're at in the market and things like that. And the fact that, that is a team that has been to the playoff in a recent spell here.
And the question would be, how much do those two move the needle? Now, let's ask the second part of the question. Who left in the Big 12, the newly configured Big 12? Is there anybody in the Big 12 that you think moves the needle as much as Oregon or Washington?
No.
Okay, so that's close. Where some people would argue, if the Pac-12 can keep their pieces together, the 10, even though they got 10 and the Big 12's got 12, they still say that the Pac-12 may be just as good as the Big 12 in regards to TV deals and keeping their conference together because of perhaps Oregon and Washington. Okay, we just said, we all agreed, Oregon and Washington might be 1 and 2, and then we don't know who would be 3 if you combine the two together. But right now they're separate conferences. So then, by that logic, we are sitting here and telling you the Big 12's not as solid ground as people in the Midwest want to think it is.
Yeah, and I think it's the collective, right, compared to what the Pac-12 brings together, right?
Sure.
It's the whole thing. And what's interesting is, like, if you're gonna ask me, I think two of the new members of the Big 12 might be better than anything else the Big 12 has.
I agree.
Except maybe TCU because of Fort Worth, right? But Houston and Cincinnati are probably toward the top of that list because of the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because of the anything else, right?
No.
There's nothing that, but and Houston and Cincinnati are not going to move the needle because we know Houston's not a college town, right? Like,
right.
It's a big market, but it's not a college town. Now Cincinnati would be a little bit different than that, maybe, but yeah, it's a collective is why the Big 12 is ahead of the Pac-12 even a little bit right now.
So isn't this a race right now between the Big 12 grabbing schools as soon as they can for the Pac-12 because it's a process of elimination? It goes back to the Golden State Warriors grabbing Kevin Durant. Did they need Kevin Durant to win a title? Not necessarily. But boy, that knocked off the top contender against them. The top contender against the Big 12 to stay alive is the Pac-12.
Absolutely.
And so if you can poach the Pac-12, now you're stronger just by taking away. It might not make you that much stronger, but it makes them so much weaker or to where they dissolve, and thus you can survive. And then the remaining members, everybody poaches who they want, and the Big 12 might be able to get Oregon or Washington, or maybe they add Stanford, or who knows what might happen. It's kind of a race from that standpoint. And there is, believe it or not, there is something out there that's been thrown out there that I don't know if there's many legs to this, that the Pac-12 and the ACC have talked about some kind of loose affiliation, because ACC is not sitting on great waters now because their TV deals hamstrung them through 2036. Now, if the Pac-12 and ACC can come to some arrangement, now all of a sudden the Big 12 is in deep trouble.
Right. And that could be kind of fun. You could just go with like the East versus West Coast type thing and have some fun with it. And we've already seen borders and geography be darned. We don't care about that anymore. So
yeah, that doesn't apply
anymore. Yeah, so we can blow that up, and you can put those two together, and you can have yourself a pretty nice football conference. And like I said, I think you could have some intriguing football matchups there. Have a little fun with that. Like I said, East versus West. It'll be interesting. Like I said, when you were previewing the show on Waterside Wake Up, I said, this is fun. We don't know what's going to happen for sure, and we get to make our guesses and stuff, but, the news changes every day, and it's just kind of fun, I think. Kind of crazy, kind of confusing, but...
Yeah, you cheer for a football team that's in a conference that's solid
now,
it's fun for you.
Coming from a Cornhusker fan, that feels pretty good counting their Benjamins, even though they are 3-9, their sixth best program on campus. I love saying that.
You do.
I've said it about Oklahoma's not exactly as high as people think. And Texas, of course, in fairness, my friend Jason, Texas football is 6th or 7th on their campus.
Okay.
Yeah. But you're cashing bigger checks right now at Nebraska. Now, Texas will be cashing as big or bigger once they're part of the SEC. So let's finish with this. This is our prediction for today. Jason, the reason I say this because Jason said it earlier today on Waterside Wake Up when I was doing the tease for the show. He said, this is kind of fun because it's always moving pieces, and every day there's a different angle and there's a different story. And I agree, it is intriguing. So as of now, what is our prediction? Do we think the Big 12 adds those four, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, and they will agree to come to the Big 12? Do we think those four are going to stand pat and make it work in the Pac-12? Or do we think we'll go even further and it would be the nuclear shot to the Pac-12? The Big 12 could actually get Oregon, Washington, and end up with six more? What is the prediction as of 10:08 on Wednesday, July 6th? And we reserve the right to revise these tomorrow once some school makes a change or SEC fires their shot and brings in Clemson tomorrow. Who knows? Or Notre Dame changes their mind and says we're going to go to the Big Ten. What would be your prediction right now? Of course, the other option would be the Big 12 doesn't get anybody, and then they actually end up being the last on the pecking order.
I think the Big 12 seems like they've been aggressive enough here right at the start to make sure that that's not going
to
happen again.
So I like to think that
I'm
going to
say they're going to add the four that we're talking about, and Oregon and Washington are going to hold out.
I agree.
To figure out what they want to do. They might end up adding Oregon and Washington.
Right, it'd just be later.
But right now, I think that they'll add the four, and they're going to hold out.
I agree with you.
I think they're going to get the six. I think Oregon and Washington are going to come along.
Do you think Colorado? Right away. Do you think Arizona State, Colorado, Utah would wait a little bit to see what Oregon, Washington do? Because if Oregon, Washington, let's say your preference is to stay in the Pac-12, you're kind of reluctantly going to the Big 12 because of the uncertain atmosphere. But let's say Oregon, Washington, you're like, you know what? If they stay in the Pac-12, we can make this work, and it'd be just as good as the Big 12 we might be joining. So why don't we wait a little bit longer to see what they do? Or do you think they just grab the lifeboat that the Big 12 throws at them, regardless of Washington and Oregon?
I think, like I was talking, the collective of what the Big 12 has right now and the way that they can negotiate.
Yeah.
It's in a way better position. It might not be, like, overall, right? Like, with Oregon and Washington as part of that. But I think that on a negotiation standpoint, where the Big 12 is headed right now, I think they'll just go. Like,
if I'm Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, I take the for sure date to prom.
Yeah.
I take it. I go for it. And then Oregon, Washington, then they're left to figure out what they want to do. But at least I feel that I'm in a stable situation. Of course, if you don't think it's stable, you wouldn't join the Big 12 right now. So if you say, you know what, I just don't believe in the leadership of the Pac-12 right now. I don't think we got enough to make it work. I think Oregon, Washington, if we stay, Oregon, Washington's going to bolt anyway. Then what are we going to do? Even though I think the Big 12 would still be an option possibly. So we don't wait too long. We got to take care of our university first and foremost, not worry about the Pac-12. Loyalty's out the window. We can say all the right things publicly in statements like Colorado did yesterday, but we know that's just a bunch of pizzazz to say the right thing. I notice it's not necessarily what I've had somebody tell me this a long time ago. It's not what people are saying. It's what people aren't saying. That's what you got to look at. What I look at is I didn't see Utah, Arizona, Arizona State. Maybe they did, and I missed it. I didn't see them come out with a statement supporting the Pac-12. Colorado did. The others didn't. And that's if... As far as I know, they didn't. That speaks more than Colorado making a statement out loud, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like we're at least waiting to see what the head cheerleader is thinking every day. You know, we're like, you know, is she looking over here? Who is she sitting by lunch? And so they're at least scoping things out or trying to get a read on what other people are trying to do. So they're not.
Here's what I would do. If I was commissioner of the Big 12, this is the simplest part. I know it's way more convoluted. I know it's way more complicated. But if I were Brett Yormark and the commissioner of the Big 12 right now, I would make a hard line push towards all six.
I wouldn't
settle for four. I'd say, you know what? We want all six of you. Mm-hmm. Boom. And then we bring you six in. And like it said in the article, if you can bring those six in, including Oregon, Washington, then you run to the table with the TV execs and the TV networks. And you say, here's our league. We got 18. We've added Phoenix. We've added Seattle. We've got a name brand in Oregon. And we can put together a really cool two-division league. We'll be the first with 18. And we can give you TV sets in these different places. And on top of what we already have, yes, we lost Oklahoma, Texas, but we added this, this, and this. And I think you've got a pretty nice product to present to the networks. I still don't think it's going to get you $80 to $100 million a year like the Big Ten or SEC, but it could get you 50 to 60 maybe. I don't know. Once again, I don't have access to those numbers. But I think that would be a great plan of attack by the Big 12 is go grab all six of these guys. And then as soon as you get them committed, you run to the table and you say, bid. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Yep.
Let's. Mm-hmm. No, we're not waiting until another year to work out our TV deal after 2025. Let's go. We know Oklahoma, Texas are going to leave after that anyway, if not sooner. Let's go.
It's another thing. You can set the market instead of have that market set against you with whatever the Big Ten's new TV and the SEC's new TV is going to be. You could get, you know, some of these, and you can go get your network first, you know, instead of waiting to see what SEC and all these people are going to do. You can set the market, you can set your numbers, and not have to wait to see what everybody else is doing. I kind of like that.
Yeah, be aggressive. Yep. Be proactive. Something Big 12 hasn't been for quite some time.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.